Welcome to the Penobscot Bay Report. I'm Ron Hirby, your host. It is September 13, 2007. Well, topping our show is the recent dredge hearing. Actually, it took place yesterday. This was a discussion of a Chimbro plan to dump dredge spoils from Brewer into Penobscot Bay. Well, at this meeting, lobstermen and environmentalists challenged this proposal by Chimbro and its unnamed corporate partners to dredge mud and woody debris from Penobscot River bottom next to the now-defunct Eastern Fine Paper site. Some of the people that spoke at this meeting were Chimbro representatives and their new project manager, Parker Hadlock. Brian Swan chaired the meeting. Gail Zdlewski spoke. The representative of the Lobster Conservancy spoke. And Sean Mahaney of the Army Corps of Engineers spoke, and Hannah Pingree. So let me describe a bit about the meeting. Chimbro Companies partnered with unnamed investors to build and operate this industrial module assembly facility. They would import parts from other states and nations, assemble them, and then ship out the completed industrial modules to be put there on site. Company representative said, like an erector set. Chimbro and its partners say they want to move quickly and be assembling these modules 12 months from now. Fishermen and conservationists at the meeting, however, as you will hear, lobbied hard for a total upland disposal option to be substituted for dumping in the bay at the Rockland disposal site. Two petitions were given to DMR. One called for a public hearing. Another expressed the concern of dozens of Bay Area citizens that would be affected. Department of Marine Resources claimed the public information meeting being held was adequate. There were objections, including myself, citing the plain language of 38480D9 dredging, which statutory chapter and verse says that a public hearing will be called when five or more people request one. The meeting was about an hour and a half long. At the head table, mostly speaking that sort of annoying sotto voce used by mid-level officials at these interagency public meetings. The head tables were two DEPers, the permit reviewer and the DEP marine ecologist. In the middle of the table, DMR's Brian Swan. On the other side, the Chimbro representatives, including Parker Hadlock, who has experience in port building and renovation, will be the project manager for this development. And as I said, this is to build, by request, modular machinery for global big business. The Army Corps of Engineers, Sean Mahaney, sat at the back of the audience, occasionally fielding requests for information from the state and industry representatives up front. There was also an environmental chemical consultant for Chimbro, very quiet in the front row, said very little, and that little with impressively developed pass-the-buck skill. Maine Lobstermen's Association President David Cousins was in the second row, several lieutenants of his, and a row or two of Vinyl Haven lobstermen and their families. The lobstermen pushed for a schedule change to minimize interference with the autumn fishery. They questioned the toxicity information. They opposed damaging their industry to better another one. Sierra Club's Vivian Newman questioned the jobs projections. The Lobster Conservancy representative voiced concerns over toxicity and the smothering of lobsters. The Lower Penobscot Watershed Association advised. The Island Institute rep spoke. Hannah Pingree gave a short statement recapping the fishermen's concerns. There were plenty of posters on easels, including an 1880 architect's drawing of the paper mill using chlorine, according to that 1880 drawing, filling the same local footprint. Showed two docks operating then, one for shipping materials and paper, one a coal dock. The navigational chart of Penobscot Bay was also on display with the east and west shipping highlighted. And there was also a chart tabulating toxic findings from some of the sediment cores. So, the pitch. Chimbro was enthused about reusing this old riverside industrial site in Brewer, providing, they said, five good-paying jobs, with a non-industry, only assembly of parts coming in, with completed industrial modules going out. If approved, the facility's first project will be sent to some facility in the Gulf of Mexico in October 2008. They wouldn't identify even their potential clients. In general, the operation will custom-build these large, complete modules plants of all types. These will then be barged to distant seaports, where they are taken in to whichever industrial facility awaits. Now, confronted on the non-transparency of their process to date, agency faces were reddened. Clearly, they'd rather not have a further public hearing. Maine DEP's permit reviewer announced the public comment period was over, but finally bent to some pressure to accept public comment to the end of the month. Now, fishermen have been trying for years to have the Bay dump site permanently closed. One lobsterman noted it was a terrible place for a dump because of the vigorous currents. They've sent the spoil spreading across the bay. 50 years of dumping, he noticed. The bottom is still flat. Now, the first plan will be removal of what were called windrows of wood on the river floor, according to divers who've examined it. Then about half the total amount of mud and sand spoils they'd be licensed to discharge, they will dig up. They may or may not use the train. The railroad tracks run past the site. So given all that, why not listen to the actual people giving presentations? We'll start with Brian Swan, who is the person running the meeting. Then we'll hear from Chinbro, and then a whole lot of other folks. Stand by.
Good evening. My name is Brian Swan, and I'm with the Department of Marine Resources. Thank you all for coming tonight on this rainy night. The purpose of tonight's meeting is to gather information and hear concerns relative to the Kanapka River Holdings and Chinbro Company's proposal to dredge river bottom sediment from along the shore of the former Eastern Fine paper mill in Brewer. And this would allow barge access to the facility that's being proposed there. Dredge spoils that have been determined to be suitable for open water disposal will be transported and disposed of at the Rossin disposal site, which is located about 3.5 miles easterly of the Rossin breakwater. And materials that are determined not to be suitable for ocean disposal will be disposed of upland. So with me this evening is Parker Hadlock and Mark Rubzinis.
Tom
Rubzinis. Mark Marjoram, who is the project manager for Maine DEP, and Lee Doggett, also with DEP. So, yeah, I would like to stress that this meeting is for the purpose of gathering information and hearing concerns related to this particular project, concerns and information that might be useful to the DMR in developing its comments and recommendations to the DEP. That's the purpose of this meeting. So we'll start with a presentation by the applicant describing the proposal, and then we'll open the floor to you all for questions and comments. So Tom and...
As Brian mentioned, my name is Tom Archinese. I work for Chinbro Corporation. I'm a project manager for this particular project. It's my responsibility to lead a team through the process of getting it designed, permitted. The permits have been sent in for the permit, and we're working on the final design and ultimately get this site developed so that we can have a module fabrication facility here in early 2008. Also with me is Parker, and he'll be getting more into the specifics of the dredging because of his extensive background in marine construction. But I want to just give you a brief overview of the project and what we're endeavoring to do. And like Brian said, we're here to get input to and hear your concerns, questions. We've got a schedule we want to work on. We want to hear what you've got to say and try to work out something that we can all live with. For those of you who don't know, Chinbro is a Maine-based company. We've been in business for nearly 60 years. We're an employee-owned company. Many of us, most of us, grew up here in Maine natives, and want to continue to work here. Our main business is we construct projects for people. People hire us to build things, whether it be bridges, industrial projects, or a number of other things, power projects. Historically, when somebody wanted a project built, they'd call you up, you negotiate a contract, and then you'd go to their site, you'd move your people, your materials, your equipment, and you'd go to their site and do their project for them. And needless to say, moving all that equipment, people, and stuff is very expensive. Over the years, we have done some modular-type construction, but not a lot of it, but it's picking up speed. And when I say modular, that's like a modular home, where you figure out what you want, you get somebody to build it, and they build it in a fixed base location under tight quality control. They utilize people that don't have to move around and live in hotels and whatnot, and using a fixed base labor pool, and they build it, and it's much more economical. You have the transportation cost, but that's more than offset by the savings in building it in one place. We've done some modular projects. The other thing we're working on is we're trying to bring work to Maine. And probably many of you have heard some of the work that we've done associated with the drill rigs in Portland. And currently we've got a couple of boats down there, ships that we're working on, that were started down south. And because of the workforce here in Maine and a good work ethic, which I know I'm very proud of, we were able to land those contracts and bring them up here and finish refurbishing those boats. But we're tapping into the local workforce, and instead of sending people out to do things out and about, bringing the work here to Maine, and that's what we want. Why Brewer? We looked around. I'll back up a minute. We had an opportunity. A client came to us, and we started negotiations over years ago. Packle was very involved with that. A company president, he was involved with that. Talking to a client that is building an industrial facility, and they want to build it in a modular fashion. Basically, you take a big factory, industrial place, and you build it. I equate it to like my kids' Lego. You build it in pieces at a fabrication facility like this, and then you transport it to their site and put it together. Instead of sending thousands of workers, this is a very big project, sending thousands of workers to their remote location, we can utilize and tap into the main workforce and build it right here.
Tom, if I can help you with that, just put it in perspective. We're talking about jobs and how many people we're talking about. We're talking about 500 jobs in the world, so it's not a model of farm operation. It's a serious amount of work that we're trying to do.
So as we were looking for places to do this, we looked at various places and we said, all right, what do we need? First of all, we need that workforce. In fact, I mentioned we hope to peak out at around 500 people. So you need a population base that you can tap into, not something way out in the boonies that they're all going to have to travel. You need a population base, and the Bangor Brewer area has that. You need an infrastructure. These people need to be able to get to work. So you need roads, you need to get your materials, your equipment, so forth there. You got I-95, and you've got a pretty good road system. Bangor and Brewer has that. Airport, one of the biggest airstrips in the Northeast is there. So the people and materials and so forth coming in by air. And we have rail available, although we're not going to utilize it initially here. It is available very handy. And finally, and very importantly, is you've got water transport. And this is a site that goes back a long time. The history of this site back in the 1700s, being used as a lumber operation, and then in more recent years as a paper mill. But they always utilized the river as a means of transporting their materials in and out. And I like to think of it as history repeating itself, and we're going right back to using those same means and methods. Like Parker mentioned, we're hoping to create about 500 new jobs. And these are going to be good-paying jobs with benefits. It's a clean operation. When I say clean, it's an assembly line. We're not doing it. It's not a chemical base. There's not a lot of those kind of processes. It's a big erector set. We're going to bring the pieces in, pull them together, weld them up, and send them back out. So compared to some of the traditional uses, it's a very clean business. And we're going to use this site that has been historically, for the last 4 years, been sitting idle. It's been an industrial site, and the people of Brewer and the area up there said it was a great chance to put it back into production again. Instead of taking a brand new site, cutting the trees, doing that kind of stuff, and trying to develop it from the ground up, we're taking a site that's already been used in that traditionally and putting it back into production. Briefly, know, what we've got to do is an existing paper mill there now. We've got to go in and develop the site. We've got to demolish a good part of the old mill, tear that down. We're going to put all new underground utilities in, and we've got to just develop the site, do the site work. And part of that is right here, and I thought this was interesting. Right here we're going to put in the bulkhead, and like I said, Parker's going to get more into that. But if you look at an old photo, an old drawing from back 1917, it's in the exact location of where they had a pier here back at that time, dating back into the late 1800s. And you can still see some of the remnants down there of the old timber privilege. We're going to put it right on top of it. So they were using that at the time to bring boats in back 100 more years ago. So that's our plan, is to put that right here, and we're going to dredge a, about 100-foot strip out into the main channel. So the only other thing I want to touch on is where we are. I mentioned that we started back a year ago negotiating with a client, and then it really started gaining momentum this spring, and sometime in early May, we assembled a team. Some of those team members are here to help us get it engineered and designed. We had to gather input from numerous people. We talked to the, I call them the fish folks, the Atlantic salmon and the smallmouth sturgeon, and numerous other archaeologists and a number of people, and kind of built that plan around what everybody's needs and wants were so that we can come up with a successful project.
And the plan we have right here, Tom, right now is not the plan we started with. I mean, it's been modified a great deal. We have a lot of different constituents along the way.
So we submitted our permits to Army Corps of Engineers and the Maine DEP in early July, I believe, and we have continued to work with them answering their questions, continuing to tweak it and change it as we learn more, and continuing on that process, and we're in hopes that we can kind of put this all together and get our permits here in the very near future and start construction hopefully sometime in October. And I've been given the responsibility to have this up and ready to go so we can start building these modules in early April. It's a tall order, and I'm a little bit nervous about it, to be honest with you, but I think we can do it. We've got a plan, and we've got some momentum. So with that, I'll let Parker get more into the details of the dredging.
I'm not nervous. My job with the project is project sponsor, and what that means in our company is I work with the client originally, trying to secure the project, and now working forward through the beginning of the project to make sure we live up to what we said we'd do for the client. So Tom and I are working very closely on this. My background is jobs that are most related to this: Casco Bay Bridge, Portland Pipeline Pier, a bunch of river crossings. So when the marine work came up, even though I was supposed to phase out a little bit, I really have a lot of interest in it, so I kind of stayed with it. So I'd like to get some facts out on the table, because there's a bunch of information out there floating around, and I want to get everybody on the same page as to what we're talking about. We'll start with that, and then probably come back to some questions. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is schedule. And we made a commitment to our client that they could ship their first finished product from our site to their site in October of 08. So that's when we need the deep water berth. We don't need that deep water berth to start our project, but we need it the first time our client says, "I'm ready for my first Lego piece," as Tom says. So that's October 1st. We spent, Gail, how long with you guys? We've been in cahoots for 3, 4, 5 months of talking about the sturgeon. You were one of the first groups we went to when we were thinking about this site and hadn't yet secured the site. And obviously, dredging a controversial issue, and we knew the salmon issues, sturgeon issues, so we went to the National Marine Fisheries Service and spent a lot of time with them talking about the habitat issues for the salmon and the sturgeon, and their group came back with a window of restriction from April 1st to August 1st. So, and what I'm trying to do here is kind of neck you down into how did we evolve to where we need to do the work. So if we're going to be done in October, and we've got a restriction from the fisheries from April 1st to August 1st, you know, those of you who know the Penobscot or any river in Maine, the high flows are from chefs in the spring, there's no time to be in a river doing dredging. So for us to build a plan,
based on us doing the dredging in the spring, we might get away with it, but it's a bad bet. Right? It's a bad bet. So April is pretty much out of there. Mid-March for the first April is pretty much off the table. Then when you get into the ice situation, obviously we can't be towing dump scows and running tugboats up and down the river. From really January right into when the ice breaks up in March. And yeah, we might get a warm January. We might be able to do it, but again, it's a bad bet. You know, we just can't build. We can't build a plan for a client who's relying on it, on a hope and a dream. So that evolves us back to we really need to be done in December. And to get done in December, with the amount of work we need to do, we really need to start in October. And we've got basically a few different pieces of work there. The first piece is there is a windrow of lumber, trees, pulpwood, every wood product known to man. There's a windrow of it right down through one side of the river, just by the way the river has reacted over the years. And clearly a lot of it has a bunch of history on it. We did a bunch of diving on it on behalf of the archaeological folks and actually learned quite a bit about what was there. So step one, we've got to get rid of that lumber. Step two is we want to take care of the offshore deposit soon, which is in this section right in here. That's because that's the piece that the weather went to heck on us and we got frozen out. That's where our biggest vulnerability is. Then we go into the upland disposal, which is basically the portion that the Army Corps has not allowed us to take to sea because the constituents in the sediments don't allow for it. So that'll be put on a deck barge and taken right to our site, and it'll actually be utilized on the site. It'll be spread around on the site. And then the last piece here is cleaning up around the cells. And to talk about the work, this berm here, while we're starting the dredging in the offshore area, we're going to be building the cellular copper dam. It's a lot like the breakwater at Jonesport, for those of you who've been there. I'm trying to think where else right around here we've got cells. Portland Bridge fenders are cells. And anytime we do work in the river for copper dams, it's typically cellular structure. So this structure is being built while we're working on the offshore dredging. Then we'll continually move in, and at the end of it, we'll end up doing, even if the weather doesn't give us a good chance, we'll be able to sit up on top of this structure and finish the enclosed dredging around those edges at the tail end of the work. That might run into January. So we're here today because we feel a real sense of urgency. And we had a discussion internally about, well, you know, we've got some permit issues we're working through and we're finishing our engineering and it's quite a hurry to get started in October. But what we talked about internally, and tonight's one of those places where we want to get some feedback from you guys, you know, the only place for us to run if we don't make it by Christmas, New Year's, is to push off until after August 1st and until the 1st of October. And my own sense of that is tougher on the fishermen, and I'm looking at you fellows, I'm guessing that's a tougher period for you fellows than it is in the fall. But you can straighten us out on that and redirect us if you got different ideas. That's why we're here. So that's what's driving our schedule. That's why we're here today. And it's wildly critical to our project that we have a facility that we can offload our customers' product on. Next item I want to square up a little bit is quantity. There's been a bunch of numbers floating around, and they're all true, but I want to put them in context. We permitted the project for 33,000 cubic yards. And that number came from a desire to build a berth that would be capable of taking the product that we want to build anywhere in the world. And there is a few, not a lot, but there are 400 by 100 foot barges that will take gear to the Gulf of Mexico, which we've already used on other jobs, or we can cross oceans or do what we need to do to make this a viable business. When that barge is fully loaded to its capacity, it needs 16 feet of draft. So what we did to figure our berth is we went to mean low water, 16 foot of draft in addition, and a foot or two under keel clearance. It would also give us a little room for a little maintenance dredging over the time that we'd have to keep up with. That's what we permitted. We don't need that for our lead job.
And what we don't want to do is go out there and build a berth, build a hole in the Penobscot River that's just going to fill in before we ever get a chance to use it. We have, Sean, you can straighten me out on this if I'm incorrect, but we have a 5-year requirement on our permit to complete our construction once we receive our permit. So our first job is about a year and a half to 2-year project. While that project is going on, we're already out working on what project will come in behind that, so that the people that work at this facility never leave it. They get there, and we just keep firing the work in one right after another. So if the next job needs some more capacity than what the first job, then we have that window of time to finish this operation. I will tell you candidly, I do not expect us to go back in there and add draft to this facility, because the capacity, most of you that are boat people, to put 12,000 tons on a 400 by 100 foot barge, the density of iron that you have to stack up on that is almost impossible in the modular world. The modular world's got a lot of air in it, a lot of air between pipe and electrical and so on and so forth. And so we think that the draft required for this first project is very indicative of what we're going to need for a draft over the whole life of the facility. So with that said, we think that the real quantity that we're going to take offshore is about 15,000 yards, or about half of the total we're actually going to have permitted right now. Out of that 15,000, about one-third of that, or about 5,000 yards, is what we're asking to take offshore. And we've been working with the Corps since early July, end of June, early July, Sean. And we've followed some testing protocols, provided them information, done borings, done lab work, analysis, and forwarded to them. And then they have a fellow in your Concord office that takes all of our results, runs it exhaustively through a variety of modeling scenarios, and then comes back with a verdict as to where that line is in our dredge spoil that can be taken offshore and that which can't be taken offshore. And we really just completed that here recently, and that's how we evolved down to the 5,000-yard number. We were actually hoping that we would take more than double that offshore, but the results are what the results are, and to meet the criteria of the site, it's about 5,000 yards. One of the things that I've heard, and I've been a variety, and I just also want to put this in context. I can't remember where I read it, but the article alluded to that it was a dirty site, industrial, dirty, large. I'm trying to think of some of the other buzzwords I saw in there. And I want to just take a minute and again put this in context. I want to talk about size first. I'm looking for this term. This is the Alpha website of the Rockland Disposal Center here. I don't know if you can see that. But this is a graph, really, of the activity over the various years that has gone to the Rockland Disposal site. And the quantity we're talking about is this little pink dot down here. Okay, we're talking 5,000, at the most 7,500 yards that we're talking about taking to the site. And you know, you can see the site at various times has taken up to 600,000 yards in a year. So the concept of large is really not appropriate. It's a small job in the scheme of things. The industrial connotation has people thinking about waste and industrial pollution and all those kinds of things. And contrary to what a lot of people think, the sedimentation type in our harbors is far more cohesive to pollutants than the Penobscot River. Most of you know old streams have gravel bottoms, new streams have mud bottoms, right? Harbors have mud bottoms. The crud is in the sediment. It's in the fines. It's not in the gravel. It's not in the sands. And in fact, there's a protocol in the Army Corps discussion of what testing you do. Basically, if it's all sands and gravel, you're out of the testing business. Is that right, Sean? Words to that effect. I mean, it has no cohesion to the pollutants. Once you get into sedimentation, the fines, that's where the crud is. So, again, the Penobscot has been flushing itself for years and years and years and years. And this outboard dredging, I'll just give you a sense of where this is coming from. If you were to take a bottom contour right in there somewhere,
that's really the piece we're talking about taking offshore right out in there. The inshore stuff has some fines in it. That's what's going up there. So it's gravelly, it's sandy, it's getting flush, and it's cleaner than most of the harbors in the state of Maine.
Where's Rip? Rip. We tested for 90 different compounds in the borings that we've taken so far. Out of the 90 compounds we tested for, we had 23 detections. And of those 23, those are the borings that we sent to the Corps, the ones with the detections. And that's what they analyzed, modeled, compared to the sediment, grain size, dispersion models, the whole nine yards. And it's that basis on which they told us where to draw the line as to what would go offshore and what would go upland. And those results, for people that are interested, I'm no chemist and I won't be answering questions on this. Those boring results are right here and what's in those borings. And if you have questions, Rip would do it justice. I would not. The last item that I want to talk about until we have questions is the tow route. We described in our permit coming down the eastern side of Islesboro, there is on the NOAA chart, there is a ship channel on each side, an established ship channel on each side. But what I've learned since then is most of the Mack Point traffic goes down the western side of Islesboro, not the east side. And so I'm here to tell you, we'll do what I'm supposed to. You know, we're not hung on one side or the other. So right now our permit says on the east side, I think. And we can modify that for the western three. Am I correct? Who knows the traffic going to Mack Point? I think it goes down the east side, excuse me, the west side of Islesboro. Is that correct? Okay. So it seems logical that you follow that.
Our barge sizes, the dredge scow, the largest dredge scow we'd use up in the river is about 45 by 150, 160. And the vessels going into Mack Point, as most of you know, are, you know, 600 by 100. So obviously we're not putting anything up the bay that's any larger than what's going up three or four times a week right now. I think that's about it.
In Rockland Harbor,
yep.
Versus, give me numbers for different options.
I'm not going to give you $1 for the proportion.
Why not? Do you know them?
We don't know them. We're working on the logistics at this time. But traditionally, the difference between offshore disposal and upland is a factor of about 10 to 1. And that comes from our history in Portland Harbor over the last number of years. Okay? I will tell you, on this job, it's less than that, and how much less, I don't know, but it is less than that because we have taken out a way to use a portion of it on the site. So we don't have a trucking component and a waste site that goes like going to the water yard or something like that. That's the piece that we've got, okay? Now, if we're forced into taking the rest of it out there, I believe we'd be back to approaching 10 to 1. But that's why I can't give you a square answer, but the ratio is and the one traditional, and we're less than that here because we're doing that.
How could you possibly be forced to take it up? Is there something we can do? Is there some kind of appeal we can make? Because I'm looking at this thing.
I hope not.
thinking, why are we here? Just for you to give us information?
And for us to get information from just the total time of year, things like that. We can adapt our plan. That's why we're here.
Kathleen Reed, state representative for District 36. I'm here speaking on behalf of a number of fishermen who have contacted me, especially from North Haven and Bottle Haven, who fish in this area as well as I'm sure many rock and lobster fishermen. They kind of meet right in that center part of the bay, and I'm sure they battle about who exactly fishes there. But it's a carryover from the last Portland, and I just want to be very clear with the Kimbrough folks that we, as many fishermen have said it well, we appreciate what you're trying to do. Bringing jobs to Maine is incredibly important. And I don't think anybody here has any issue at all with what you're trying to do. I mean, I think it's a great thing for the state of Maine. Obviously, our issue is not with you. It's kind of with this long-time battle that's been going on every time there is a, I probably call it industrial, but more industrial dredge project that gets dumped right in the middle of Penobscot Bay. Obviously, when the Portland side of the Portland Harbor was being dredged and the spoils came to Penobscot Bay, a lot of frustration because there is an ocean disposal site off of Portland, but it has a higher level of testing required, so it was more economical to bring it to Penobscot Bay. So you're dealing with some history here, some frustration of again, why are you dumping this sort of in our prime fishing territory? I think we all agree that some dredging needs to continue in order to keep working harbors going, but this is a disposal site that is seems poorly located to me. I've put bills in to try to change it. I've realized it's really more of a federal issue, and the Army Corps says, yeah, you're right, it's not a very good place for an ocean disposal site. Today we've never put it there, but this is where it is, and it's too hard to change it. So clearly that's our problem, that's DMR's problem, the DDP. I mean, we should be looking at how to move the site further offshore, because no matter what, there are always going to be some larger projects like this that come about, and they want to dump it here. And of course, it's going to be frustrating to fishermen because it's going to happen in the fall. People are still out fishing in the fall. The season has pushed further and further back every year, and October, November is still a great time to be out there. So for us, I mean, we've seen a rising level of contaminants in lobster. I think it's a real marketing problem that lobster are showing up with more and more mercury and dioxin and everything else in them. So we're worried about that. I'm saying this to you, it's as much my problem as it is your problem. This is not a good site. And, you know, I say to the folks at Kimbrough, I'm sorry you're caught in the middle of this because you're trying to do a good thing here, but just realize we don't like this site, we don't like stuff being put here, and we're frustrated every time the issue gets raised again. So it's not really a very good question, it's just kind of more of a statement.
You're going to be disposing of, it looks like, two-thirds of it on-site, and I think you said it's going to be significantly less expensive to dispose of it on-site, even though you have to cap it, because it's a brownfield. You'll have to cap the toxic on that site.
We actually, this material, we're talking about 50-foot square, this material, even the stuff that's going upward,
it's not on that chart, though, is it? That's only the offshore, so we can't even look at the numbers. The numbers for what's going to Rockland cover.
That's what's represented.
Oh, that is?
Yeah.
That's not harmful? That's considered okay?
Yeah.
Thresholds.
Even the copper?
Yeah.
I have two questions, one related to that. But the first question is, how much would it cost you to take the 5,000, if it's really only 5,000 cubic yards, and take it to North Rock or some other landfill site, as opposed to disposing of it at all in the water? That would be my first question. Well, it would be 10 to 1, right?
Yeah.
So, but since you are already going to be disposing of 2/3 of it on site at a significantly reduced cost, it may still be cost effective for you to dispose of that in Norris Rock and not impact the bay, since you're lucky enough to have brownfield.
Diane Cowan, the Lobster Conservancy, more on the chemistry. You're the chemistry guy. Do you have to look at any of these contaminants in terms of what they do to lobster?
We're not actually doing the modeling of it for the acceptance of the dude forward with the results up to the Army Corps and as people who specifically run the model if it is acceptable to make it in the
Do you eat lobster?
We look at just a little point of background. My background. My son is a researcher for Cornell, spent most of her career on invasive species and what's her name?
What's her name?
Robin Lucy.
Oh yeah, I know Robin.
Yep. Yep. And so I don't remember that she was on the trip before I said what she might say.
And that's why I was trying to see if we could appeal to just your better nature and your desire to protect the lobsters, thinking you live in Maine, you've been a lobster, and you must care about these animals. And you must realize that dumping, even if the stuff has none of it, the levels of copper it has in it, dumping this stuff on them just flat out kills them.
I wouldn't be sitting here if I thought it.
But the lobsters are there and you're dumping this on them. That's a direct impact. And then there's an indirect impact of taking away part of their habitat. And that's what really happens. That's what you're really doing. And if you just pay more money, you can dump it someplace else where you're not doing that.
Mm-hmm. I want to turn over to your barges again. Yours that you'll be moving your product on. Where are we going outside the United States? Are those barges going to be where your final product goes? And
the first project we have that will be going to the Gulf of Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Now, because barges going on long journeys empty can be sort of a bear to maneuver around. Are they going to fill with ballast water down at one end and bring it up here? Do you have any kind of ballast water management plan for these things?
We don't yet, but if it's required for towing, we go to a PFAS plan and a ballast plan to accommodate a certain load.
Mm-hmm.
And every load will be a little different.
There will
be a plan for each one.
Okay. Another thing, we noted when the dry dock barge was shipped from China down the head of Maine, when it landed, it had a very impressive growth of Asian things growing, just those fouling organisms and so on. And so, are you going to be able to be reviewing what you're carrying along on your barges?
Yeah, and I know more about that from heard a couple things here tonight that are important to us to learn. We can adapt our plan. The first one is, it's the west side of Olive Grove. If we do it, it's the west side of Olive Grove, the preferred route. And the other item we heard is August is the preferred period to be doing that disposal. We heard that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to look at our fur and see how he can. He can present the operational problem to us because the offshore is, if we don't take that out, we've got to get inshore and get the stuff that's going upland. But we're going to take a hard look at how can we do that in reverse order of what we plan so that we can do the offshore after all.
Hmm.
So we think we heard loud and clear, and we'll take it.
Did you actually also hear Diane Cowan's request?
Yes.
Because I think that would be what all of us, it would be really, you'd get a lot of goodwill from a lot of folks around today if you chose to take all of it up.
No, I can't hear what that means. That's again, we'll continue to see if we can figure out a way. But it's difficult to try.
She did it. That's all bucks.
Yeah.